get started?
Let's kick it.
He'll not join us today. There are a couple of items for the discussion today, and then perhaps a couple of other business items. But we'll get started. Continued discussion on the proposed Hoover ordinance, or TNC ordinance. And we did bring that to a vote at the last meeting, and it did fail on a 3-3 tie. And there was then some discussion that we would come back at this meeting and discuss any remaining questions or just have some dialogue among the council, and then perhaps we could take some sort of action this evening. So with that, I'm going to, Mr. Just Campion, and then Mr.
Just to preface, do we have someone on staff taking notes so that the ordinance can be updated on the fly? Perfect. I just want to make sure we're not,
there you go.
We don't roll through a whole bunch of changes and then not have anyone report it. Appreciate it. Thank you.
So with that in mind, Mr. Hickey, did you want to start off? Because I know you had a question.
So I look forward to the discussion. I mean, up until now, so last time we got close, we asked the Uber representatives questions, but we've never talked about the ordinance among ourselves. We've never gone through it line by line. So I look forward to that opportunity today. What's the phrase we've kicked around lately? The false dichotomy. So the false choice has been, if we want to talk about this or have a reasonable discussion, somehow, you know, we're against Uber. So what we have before us is the St. Paul ordinance with lined through suggestions from Uber. But this is the current ordinance that Uber is operating under in St. Paul. So the idea that somehow this would be so onerous that it couldn't be adopted, again, I think that's a false claim. So I think, for me personally, I just have a few questions left, and then, so however we want to go about it.
Go for it.
All right. So I think the insurance question's been answered. So as I understand it, I think Aaron had said that, in fact, the state legislation on the ordinance or the insurance requirements now is in place. So the parts of the St. Paul ordinance referred to insurance wouldn't be necessary. So again, now Uber has gone through and lined through this, and at one point in the discussion, the statement was made that this is the requirements of Uber or they're not going to come to town. But Ms. Carla Jacobs had said, no, that wasn't the case. You know, they're willing to work, you know, with the ordinance that we come forward with. So I think it's up to us to decide what's good for Rochester. So obviously, I understand Uber, some of these things would be convenient for them, but you know, what's good for Rochester? So looking at page 11.
If you could give us like a section.
Yep. 95B.08, subdivision 2. So St. Paul has a program of annual inspections. And many of these things, we kind of questioned the Uber representatives last time, and they gave their response, but you know, we've never discussed it among ourselves, what's appropriate for Rochester. So their contention is, you know, you just rate it on an app and that's good enough. We don't need any, you know, vehicle inspections. But, you know, I would say that, you know, we can do the same thing. We don't do that with housing standards. You know, you could say we're just going to let the renters decide, you know, who the slumlords are and not have any standards and let the market dictate. So, I mean, and if that's, you know, if that's the agreement we come to and that's what we want as a council, that's fine. But it's not clear to me why we wouldn't want annual inspections. If these are things that have been important in the past in Rochester, other than the fact that Uber finds it inconvenient, why wouldn't we want annual inspections for vehicles?
And you're referring to 95B.08,
subdivision 2D
as in dog.
Correct.
And I think that statement, as I read it, it's there's the annual inspection, but then they put some criteria on it in terms of the age or mileage of the vehicle. So it's a bit of a two-part comment, Mr. Wojak.
So do you want the back and forth now, or do you want him to go through his points, or because I can go either way?
I'd like to go through it methodically and just get it done. So let's assume we're up to 95B08.
Okay. So a couple of responses to get us to where we are. The insurance, yeah, the state's taking care of that. There's no disagreement there. There seems to be a mentality here that our goal is not to work with a potential business here in Rochester, but rather to implement requirements that are not used in similar places to Rochester, as opposed to, trying to make this as least burdensome as possible. Case in point, the Fargo-Moorhead Ordinance has no such vehicle inspections. And for those of us that are connoisseurs of Uber and have used it, we know that the current system is working just fine for millions and millions of people. So the question is, why do we as Rochester want to put additional hurdles in to make it more difficult for Uber and similar companies to operate here? I would take the other approach and say that, unless the system is broken with these recommendations that Uber came with, we shouldn't go trying to force new requirements on them. And so I guess I'd take diametrically opposite approach on that one.
So you would leave it stricken?
By the way, actually, it's 95B09 where most of the annual inspection language is found. 95B08 sub 2D simply states that at the time of the annual inspection, they check the model years.
Yeah.
But I think the actual inspection language, you're
curious on to the next page.
Yes. Okay. And there's purplish and pinkish language, and they've both been struck. Whose is which?
Anything that doesn't have your name on it comes from Uber. They just had multiple attorneys or whoever it was from Uber doing it.
So the bottom line is
I couldn't track any of what they were doing.
The bottom line is 95B09, they struck all the requirements for an annual inspection. Okay.
Comments, questions on that? Again, we're talking about the inspection requirement and criteria. Mr. Bilodeau?
I'm not going to get into a big discussion about the inspection criteria, but the fact is that one of the things that Uber does that doesn't happen with cab companies and things of this nature is the drivers are rated the vehicle. That part of that is vehicle appearance, and the vehicle is operational enough. So they're actually being inspected almost every time. Well, not almost every time they're having a rider, they have an inspection. So I think it's different than what you typically get in a cab, and the fact that no one ever makes a response, or very few people make a response to a cab ride, versus Uber, where they're being graded every time off.
Mr. Campbell?
I think maybe that gets a little bit to my concern about it, is the... my concern about the taxicab ordinance might be that it's promoting or regulating things that ridership doesn't necessarily care about. And so the free market would tell us, is a 10-year-old or vehicle going to play an impact or not? You know, in Uber's case, the idea is that if you had a 10-year-old vehicle, you're going to start getting 1-star reviews or whatever, because people don't like riding in an old car. Does promoting this as an ordinance prove that it's necessary to deliver a taxi experience to have a 10-year-old or newer vehicle? I don't really, what I'm trying to struggle with is, like, it seems like we're putting an artificial limit on it. Why wouldn't we say 5 years? Why wouldn't we say 25 years? You know, what's the justification for the 10-year mark? Is it just because it exists in other legislation that we're setting at 10 years?
Mr. Bilodeau?
And I think the problem, too, is when you look at safety, it's how people maintain the vehicles. I know somebody's building a 1944, and I think that picked up in that vehicle would be really cool. But, of course, it has to run. So, but I think the fact is what we're really looking at is the safety and what the safety is done and if it's updated. And I think that's where the ridership, the riding Uber, they look at that right now and they make those reports now. I think the difficulty is when you look at cabs, it's done once annually, and then when's it done after that? And how is it maintained and recorded? So.
Okay, Ms. Means, then Mr. Hickey.
Actually, I think that we want to provide good service to the people. And it seems like, based on the information that I've received, and you all have probably received many, many names of people that fully support Uber, and they want to have Uber in the city. And it doesn't have, we focus a lot on downtown and the bar scene, but there are many people that want to just go shopping or go to the mall or go to the doctor, whatever it may be, and that option should be available. And I find that parents also use it for their children, and they can have some monitoring for that. So I think it's a way for us to look at this as to providing additional services to the people in response to their request that this is a service that is provided by the city. I think in terms of the conditions, could have a review in 1 year, you know, and have, you know, look at it again and see how things are going based on the ratings and so forth. I don't recall seeing anything about smoking, but I hope there's a requirement that there's no smoking in this ordinance. So I didn't see it. So I would like to have that inserted wherever it may be appropriate, that perhaps no smoking in the vehicles. We do it with our city cars, with our county cars. You know, you're doing a service. We should be mindful of the people.
We're doing it as part of our city cars because we have an employer-employee relationship.
Okay. Well, that's something to think about. That's one thing I would like to see.
I heard it.
But other than that, I wish this would go forward and give it a year to work out anything that may be contentious or need revision and support what our citizens are asking for.
I've got Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Woodbury.
Yeah, so I mean, we're probably going to run into a similar, I guess, discussion as we go through these various topics, you know, driver standards, driver qualifications, driver training, license revocation. You know, I just think that to say let the free market take care of it, it has its limitations, so that's certainly an argument. But again, I would say, you know, why don't we do that with housing standards for rentals? Just say that the slumlords are going to get put out of business because people aren't going to rent from them, so we don't need standards. So I think it has its limits. Certainly free enterprise is a beautiful thing, but it has its limitations. And if we throw that up for everything, then I guess in most instances we can throw out a lot of standards that we have in our ordinance. And like I said, I just want to talk about it. So that's where we're going.
My intention, and I want to be like super clear, I prefer to hear your concerns than to have this become a contentious thing again. So mine is more of trying to outline, you know, is it 10 years the sticking point? Is 10 years just, we think that this could be a useful regulation to have in some form, whether it's 10 years or it's 15 years or whatever the number is. And I think, you know, eventually if we get to a certain year number, it doesn't even matter anymore, right? Like, how many 25-year-old cars are there? I don't know, probably not as many as I'd like 10 engines.
Yeah, I'm okay with this particular clause. I'm okay with leaving it stricken and, as Dean said, you know, can evaluate that period of time.
Yeah, I would say that I'm gonna pull out the false analogy, logical fallacy card here between this and other, you know, the using the rental housing as an example. And the reason why it's a false analogy is because it's quite easy for a person to switch their switch where they're getting a ride or how they're getting a ride. It is quite a bit more difficult for them to switch their housing situation. And there's a rapid feedback mechanism with multiple users for Uber. There is not on the housing stock. So, you know, I'm not going to, not really interested in going too much into that. I just wanted to quickly point out, and this is something that we, you know, could in theory put into the policy. I don't know if the state's taking it up in terms of ride sharing, but Uber itself doesn't allow smoking in vehicles.
I thought they said they did.
And I wonder if it's the differences, whether there's riders in there or not riders in there. But from a practical standpoint, when you get the as soon as you pull up the car and you can see that they have a 1-star rating because they smelled smoky, they're done with.
Okay, Mr. Bill.
And I think it's important that we hear everybody out and listen to what everybody has to say. I think that's important. That helps us make decisions. With the general public at public hearings, we hear about. I do think we do need to figure out at what point, how do we move this on? You know, are you looking to get a consensus?
Right. Yeah, I think just by section.
So just simple consensus in terms of the striking of that language that we've been discussing the last few minutes. Consensus to leave it stricken?
Yeah.
Valid point, though. I mean,
I'm not saying that's not fine.
Is that how we want to know it? Do we want to just note that we're leaving by section? Okay, subdivision 9.
Mayor.
What do we have for our cabs currently? That's 10 years, isn't it?
Yes, right. The taxi cab ordinance requires them to be no older than 10 years. We don't have the mileage restriction. We do have the age restriction.
And I do think a corollary to all of this discussion and perhaps passage is that we're going to take a look at the taxi cab ordinance and, you know, probably deregulate to some degree and reduce some of those requirements.
I agree with you, Mr. Staver, that has to be done. Remember at the last council meeting, if anybody was awake at that moment, We had asked City Clerk Mr. Reeves to turn around and send the ordinance that he had already started to mark up to the cab companies to get their input, because I think we all agree that if we the Uber moves forward, we need to do something with our cab company ordinance as well to make it put it as much as, I won't say equal footing, because I don't know if you can ever get totally equal footing, but bring it as close as possible.
Do we know, Mark, you mentioned about people will rank or, you know, evaluate their ride and the vehicle and the driver and all that. Do people really do that?
Yes.
Yeah. Is it mandated?
You get as soon as you get out of your ride.
I've not used it, so I don't know.
As soon as you get out of your ride.
They make it easy.
And being a newbie, it was pretty simple for me.
Okay.
I went with an experienced Uber rider, but as soon as I got out, within a matter of minutes, I had a scale asking me to rate the driver right away. It wasn't a day later, it wasn't 2 days later, it was within minutes the time that we got out of the cab. And it's very simple to do, and it does allow you to comment.
Okay. So I just want to say, you are correct, they do not explicitly prohibit smoking. I found their policy. So.
Okay, so consensus, we can leave this section alone. I want to move on to another section.
Yeah, I had a question on, so it's 95B12, section E3, and it's page 14 on my document, and it has to do with a number of moving violations within the last 3 years. And again, you know, it's somewhat the same argument, how much, you know, it's an arbitrary number, but why does making, you know, allowing more moving violations, so it's certainly convenient for Uber, so that's easier to get drivers with more moving violations. But again, how is this better for Rochester? And again, I'm just going with the St. Paul ordinance as a baseline, and then if we're going to change it, why is it better for Rochester? So I think the St. Paul ordinance says no more than 2 moving violations in the last year, and Uber suggested no, 3 for the initial sign-on for a new driver. 3 is just fine in the last year. So again, I just throw that question out there. Why is that better for Rochester to have more moving violations?
You know, that in and of itself is not, these moving violations are the incredible minor ones too, and most of us have probably sat through the taxi cab driver hearings where we've, you know, waived some things in order to allow them to drive, and typically the kind of stuff that we're waiving is probably more serious than what would fall under these moving violations. But I think, and there is one point I want to bring up, the reason why Rochester benefits is we want people of Rochester overwhelmingly want Uber here as a service to complement what we already have available for transit. So my goal is 2 to 3. I don't see that ever making a difference between a company choosing to be here or not. But the goal is, for me, is to establish TNCs here, not just to pass an ordinance. So whatever we can do to make it easier to get these new companies up and running, I'm for it, but I wouldn't fall on my sword on the difference of 2 and 3 on this one, though.
I have no problem with 2. Well, we can always put the caveat in there. 2, and then if you get an additional, if you wish to appeal to council, just like we do with the cab companies now, yep, you could do that, and then it would be our opportunity to grow. Otherwise, I have no issue with 2.
Let's do 2. I don't think we need the caveat.
Okay.
I can live. I would additionally say to, just for point of the record, that they did make the bullet 4, yep, subsection 4, more restrictive.
Correct.
So I think we still have significant coverage there. So
yes.
2, okay. Perfect.
So what's the consensus? Leave it at 2?
Yeah.
All right. Moving on.
All right. So 95-12 again, G, just kind of the overall driver qualifications. And again, not back to the argument of, you know, what's, how much is enough, but just the idea we're going to strike these driver qualifications. I mean, is that better for Rochester? Uber said they can live with all these things either way. So if this makes it better for Rochester, then I think we should do it. If not, I'm not sure why we want to strike all of them. And under the same thing, it'd be J, K, driver training, license revocation within the past 5 years. So all those have been suggested to be stricken, and again, you know, how's that better for Rochester?
All right. Mr. Gortek?
I am not a big fan of, in particular, the requirements. This would apply when we discuss it as a separate matter, the taxi cab companies, but the requirements for the citizen or the ambassador training, just from the standpoint, and it looks like the market has spoken on that too, as the overwhelming percentage of people who have gone through that program haven't bothered to keep their certification current. So I think there's some value, and perhaps drivers would see value and choose to do it themselves, but I just am not familiar with why we would need them to go through the certification training.
And just to be clear, this G, obviously,
okay,
is for
St. Paul, so.
It's not the CTA.
Okay.
It's a more general, and I'm not even sure if it's well-defined, but it's in the St. Paul ordinance.
And I don't have it in front of me right now, so, but that's my thing, is the CTA, what do we call it, CTA?
CTA is 8 hours. CTA. That's a very, that's more than this. Much
okay.
More. I would simply state that anecdotally, I've had both taxi cab drivers and Uber drivers that have lacked knowledge of where they're driving, and in both cases they got me to where I needed to go. What does this mean, and how is it enforced, this demonstrated knowledge, like who's going to apply the test? It's one of those ones that I think feels meaningful but probably wouldn't have a whole lot of teeth. It would be hard to clarify, is it having a demonstrated knowledge, having a GPS unit and being able to enter the address very quickly, is that sufficient? What's the criteria? So I don't particularly find G to be super compelling, and the rest of it is, again, I the license suspension thing, I think a lot of these, let me review K again. But I'll leave my comments to G and J.
Well, let maybe finish up on G. I'm okay with leaving that stricken, mainly because you pre-agree on the price. So if you don't enjoy a ground, and it's your dime, it's your gas.
You really want to take me on that? If they really want to take me on that Twilight Drive, I guess.
So I didn't have a problem with G. So if we're okay with that one, then we can move on to your comments on J&K.
I will say, though, in terms of the CTA program, even growing up in the city, there were things that you heard and you thought were true that when you go through that program, you realize are not. So the CTA program is a very valuable program. The fact is, whether you want to make everybody take that, I think we should encourage people, but I don't think it should be a requirement.
And I would agree it has some value. If you think about it, the first and last person you may encounter in your visit to Rochester is the taxi driver or TNC. They're the ones, we've all been on travel, and you're asking the driver coming in, where's a good place to eat, or is there anything to do, they are your resource for the community. And they are also, as you leave the city, your last impression of your visit to Rochester. So that's where I think some of the value of that program comes from, and making sure that they have some understanding of Rochester. But, all right. Mr. Campion, did you have comments on J and K?
I don't know. K is kind of an interesting one because it says, has taxi cab or commercial driver's license suspended, revoked, or non-renewed by a city or state? So, non-renew could be I let it lapse, right? I think the interpretation of it would. I understand why it would be kind of like you wouldn't want one where it's been, suspended for a reason. Like, is there a? I'm thinking of a legal determination you want to make. Like, you did something. The city determined that the suspension or revocation of your license was.
That's covered by the terms suspended and revoked. To cover your concern about non-renewal, you could say involuntarily non-renewed.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm. To me, that one is kind of.
Mr. Reeves, you had a clarification?
The only hard part I would have is unless it's a City of Rochester taxi cab license, we would have no way to verify if it was any other city or any other state. There's no database.
Well, you could check on the CDLs, on the commercial driver's license, through the state.
I don't think that would show up a taxi cab driver's license.
It would show if it's been suspended or revoked.
A driver's license, but not a taxi cab,
no.
Specifically.
It says, or commercial driver's license.
Oh, that one, yes. The CDL part, yes, but not the specific taxi cab one. We know ours if we suspend a driver or something. But
it also gives you the basis to suspend your authority if it's determined later on that they did have a suspension and didn't put it on their application form, which we have taken action.
Yes.
Right.
Against taxi cab drivers, we're doing just that.
Yes.
All right.
So I would leave K. I would leave K. Cannot have it stricken is what I would suggest.
Would you be amenable to the or involuntarily not
renewed? Sure. Yeah, sounds good. I think that's what they meant, but it never hurts to clarify.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is a significant population of people, so I'm not not overly. But yeah, I agree. Let's leave it.
Shouldn't be a shock. What about Jay?
I think it's kind of in the same category as.
Does Uber provide training for their drivers?
I believe it's
prior to
video.
It's easy to video.
So I think what she said.
It's not a course, I guess, is what she's told us.
Whatever. So they do provide some sort of overview of the organization or probably their operating procedures, whatever.
I think the licensing official is going to be their concern here, is that we would basically have the authority to approve or disapprove of their training regimen, which I think I can see why they would be not fussed about that. I would strike J.
I don't want to be the offer train driver training as the licensing official.
I certainly wouldn't want the city at having be put in a position to having look like we endorsed their training. I think they're responsible for their training.
So we're going to strike J and leave K?
I would strike
J. So I'm okay with leaving J stricken, but leave K in.
Modify.
Voluntary.
Right?
Yeah. Is that?
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Okay.
That's fine.
Okay, moving on.
95B14B kind of goes back to vehicle standards again, so if we're not going to, we're just going to let that fall into the app.
95B14, driver ID card?
Is that what you're... I'm sorry, 95B15E, I'm sorry. And that's just, it falls at the same like vehicle standards. We already covered that, I believe.
Right, we did.
I had a question on. Let's get here now. 95B15 subdivision.
95 what?
B15 subdivision 10 or 11, I guess.
Page 18.
Page 18. So they had some reference in the St. Paul ordinance that there was some kind of coordination if they didn't have handicap accessible vehicles available, that they would coordinate with the local, I assume, cab company to do a handoff or a referral. I don't know what the thoughts were on that. It seemed like that was an interesting provision, something that could be useful.
I think that's a really good point. I guess my preference would be not to put that in the ordinance now, and then to pursue that with Uber directly, because they seem like they were actually open to figuring out how that would work. I think that's a huge missing market here, given how much we've heard from the paratransit people about trying to find other options. So I totally support it.
Mr. Gilbeck?
And I think I agree with Mr. Campion. One of the problems we have in the city is our cabs, per se, are not handicap accessible. We only had one cab company that had one handicap accessible vehicle, and I understand they've taken it off the street. And so a lot of that's given to RNS or the city bus lines until a certain time, or Zips. So I don't know what that would help us at all. I mean, I think that's something that Mr. Campy says we can address later when we figure out the right route to make sure people are taken care of.
You know, and as I read that particular subdivision, I thought it would perhaps take care of itself. If I call a TNC and, well, I have a wheelchair, well, I can't handle that, well, do you know where I can get?
Right.
And so they would naturally refer them, I think, without having to dictate it.
And I still think you're right that the airport plays a big role in this, because depending on how they got to Rochester, I think, you know, a lot of people that need transit of special variety coming off the airplane will have the contacts at the airport to make that happen.
So, Mr. Wojcik.
I would prefer to leave it stricken, but I would. Uber does a lot of custom programs in the markets in which they operate, and this I think that there is a tremendous market opportunity here. One of their products that they can offer is a medical transport. I think they're doing that in some cities.
Yeah.
It would be really fantastic to get something like that here, because I suspect it would be a lot more efficient and affordable than this current setup.
You know who would be a fantastic group to work with Uber to make this happen?
You guys say it.
I think it would be great to see, as a destination medical center, if we could really engage Uber about our special transit needs for the city of Rochester around that. I'm just saying that into the ether, though. So
hope somebody picked it up.
Yeah. So basically, I'm okay with where is everyone else at? You okay?
Yep. Same.
All right.
I would like to see it again as one of those things that we make sure we follow up and make sure that people that have a need have the opportunity to use transportation.
You know, just as an aside here, I think one of the opportunities in this is at some point we're going to be able to take a look at the cost of meeting some of our zip style ride needs through services like this versus the way we've traditionally done it. And I think there's a great opportunity perhaps to save quite a bit of money and efficiency by doing it this way in the future. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. Move on. Oh, Mr. AP.
Yeah, if I'm ready to move on. So
yep, okay.
Yep.
I had a question, 95B17, subdivision 3E. It talks about, this may be more specific, but just the idea of the background checks. So I know St. Paul does spot checks of Uber's background checks. So I think, you know, those would be kind of the choices. Do we just completely leave it up to Uber, or do we spot check, have some method of spot checking their background checks?
Mr. Ward, yeah.
You know, it would be good to have the option. I don't know necessarily the obligation to do that, just from the standpoint that I'm not worried about Uber, because you have to go through their system to get into the system, and they have a pretty decent background check. It could be the other TNCs that come in, potentially. So I think it's giving us the ability to do that, and I don't know if we even need that in the ordinance to do it.
But I think one interesting thing is we saw some information today where St. Paul will do spot checks, where they call a driver, get in, and they identify that they're doing an inspection. But Uber pays St. Paul $35,000 a year to do that, or to help cover those costs, whereas they would not be paying us. So if we want to do that spot check-in or that sort of spot background check or inspection of a vehicle or whatever, it would be on our dime.
I wasn't suggesting anything as elaborate as that. Obviously, St. Paul does very elaborate spot checks of the vehicles out on the street. I was just talking about a clerical thing that you pull a record and do a spot check, so it'd be less costly.
From what I understand with my conversations with Uber, they are not in favor of allowing access to their records of drivers or anything like that. So that's why in the St. Paul case, they do their own spot checks, not necessarily review theirs. So I don't know. I mean, I'm always speaking from our conversations with them.
I didn't understand that.
I was going to say, so I mean, I don't think, I mean, I know they're not going to let us see their background check, but I assume we have access to who's driving.
Oh.
I mean, I guess, right, that we could do an independent check is what I was suggesting.
How often were the checks by St. Paul then?
They do 5 to 10 a week. And
okay.
They just, like I said, they make random calls for service at random app hails for service at different times and then go through. Mm-hmm.
And so a less comprehensive program could be executed by the city. It would have a cost associated with it, but we could execute something. It looks like you can run the background check for about $40 a person. We
actually right now have, depending on what we do with our taxi cab ordinance, we kind of have a flat rate fee we pay to a company to do pretty much unlimited background checks for us, just because it was too hard to do per check basis. It's actually much cheaper for us to do a flat rate one. So we can do it without a fee involved. We're already paying that fee unless something changes the taxi cab ordinance, and then we'd have to look at that.
Well, if we're not making it a requirement of the TNC, but we might choose to do it on our own spot checking, then language doesn't need to be in the ordinance. It's not a requirement of the TNC, Mr. Hickey.
The only question is, what's the criteria if they fail? I mean, if we don't have a... I'm just asking. What would constitute a failed background check? I think right now it's probably defined in the tax cab ordinance, but if we don't have something in here...
I think they have something in here that is
it
disqualifiers.
Okay.
I mean, essentially, you would report it to Uber saying we found a background check that did not pass, and then they would be responsible for resolving the issue, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I should have let us finish this looking.
Yes, 95B12 on page 13 does address the driver requirements. So my guess would be that as if we did a spot check and we found that those driver requirements were not being met by that driver, they would then be in violation of this ordinance and we would enforce it that way. But I can comment on the conversation I had with St. Paul today that they've only had minor issues, but when they found any issue, Uber has immediately pulled the driver until they addressed it. And like I said, most of those were out-of-date mechanical certificates that they're supposed to carry and those sort of things, but we would have that ability then through the ordinance if we didn't address these things.
All right. I'm okay with you there.
Okay. Next.
And I think I just had, that's it for line by line. I just had some overall questions. You know, just as we proceed here, I mean, I think for a long time we've been moving in the direction of improving it. I just wanted to go through and talk about it. Now we've talked about it. I'm happy. And also, I think we've kind of agreed that if we do this, we need to do something with the taxi ordinance. So I just wanted to get a sense for a timeline on that, because this certainly has the potential to change the landscape of taxis in Rochester and Rochester. So I just wouldn't want that to languish. So I don't know if we have a feel for what the timeline would be to address the taxi ordinance.
Mr. Reeves, what was the cab companies to respond?
I received all the cab company responses back on Friday. I should be able to pull those together easily this week, and then I can have it back in front of you whenever you'd like to review it again.
Okay. So we could review it before the next company on the 9th, or on the 19th, we could review the ordinance. When are we going to meet on
second
the
19th?
Second
reading. Leaves.
I'll be here on the 19th.
Mrs. Means is part of the on the 19th for her retirement from council. I'm just thinking when we could have back so we could vote on it on the night of the 19th. So that it stays pretty close in line with the Uber ordinance or the TNC ordinance.
We were not scheduled to have a formal COW meeting on the 19th.
Would you have it by next week?
Tomorrow afternoon, probably.
Okay, well, the 12th would be fine. Yeah, I'm just thinking that if we could review it on the 12th, that way it would be kind of
right
close.
Now, it's a fairly light agenda for next Monday.
So how about we bring it back on the 12th?
That's all right. Mm-hmm.
I just had one last question. So the airport agreement with the ride sharing, that would come in at the same time, or are they going to negotiate a separate airport agreement? Or
if you remember, it's been a while, but when we originally talked about this the very first time, we did have a copy right. of that airport agreement in there. That has been negotiated with the airport. They're happy with it.
Okay.
They didn't have any concerns. They were able to address all their issues. They were able to get funded for the things that they need to make sure that everybody's complying. But that will be done on an individual basis. So this is an agreement with Uber.
Right.
So that agreement wouldn't go into effect until we adopt this ordinance.
Correct.
Uber actually applies for a franchise, is granted, goes through that process. Then we would approve that airport ordinance with them.
There's
and
a
then
franchise?
Or license, I'm sorry. License.
Because there's a 30-day delay on a franchise. I don't recall seeing any requirement for franchise.
Right, I'm sorry, license. Taxi cab franchise. But so then every TNC that would come in that wants to operate at the airport would have to negotiate a separate agreement.
Right.
So we have one in place that we're comfortable with. So if Uber gets through and gets licensed, then they would have that rate approved.
All right.
Okay. Anything else? So,
oh, I have a question. It's on page 18. Subdivision 15D. Okay.
Yep.
95B15 subdivision 15D. It says refuse to convey an orderly passenger after accepting dispatch to convey that passenger. I wonder what criteria is being used to refuse to service an orderly passenger.
The driver may not. Just so subdivision 15 starts with they may not refuse.
So if the driver has agreed to give me a ride and they show up and for whatever reason they refuse, they would be in violation of this particular clause.
Unless they were acting in a disorderly fashion.
Never.
Correct. That's where that orderly language comes into play.
And I'm just curious with independent contractors, can Uber enforce that or how does that work? I guess I know that's how they operate right now, but there's been certainly problems with this too. With an independent contractor relationship, can they direct people? They must pick these drivers or these passengers?
Well, I assume with an independent contractor relationship, they have a contract which among other things, gives the Uber the right to terminate that relationship.
Okay.
I was also thinking they would be in violation of our ordinance, which would probably put them in.
But he was addressing more of the contractor-contractee relationship, which we wouldn't have any control over. Mm-hmm. But if it's in the independent contractor agreement, Uber would.
Actually, that's a good question.
Okay. Mr. Billebeck.
Just to follow up on Ms. Means' question, that we should bring this back in a year. We'd like to have this contract should be, or ordinance should be reviewed in 1 year from time of acceptance.
Let's do them both.
So you want a sunset clause in the ordinance?
No, I just think we need to have a review date.
Just a provision that it should be reviewed 1 year after enactment.
Yes.
We don't need that in the ordinance. Yeah. Are you going to put that in the ordinance?
Well, that's what I was thought. Oh, yeah, that's that, what that, I, you wanted it going down.
Yeah, I do. I just want to make sure that it comes back and when we have a chance to look at
the builder back law.
Not to be confused with
the
Unziger.
I'm going to push all kinds of. I want to know timelines.
Or sooner if necessary.
Well, sooner if necessary is correct.
So this could potentially come before us this evening under other business, correct?
Correct.
Great.
And I'm highly confident it will.
And we have the corrections noted that we've talked about.
They were fairly minor, so I'm assuming the city attorney feels comfortable with
a modest comfort reading.
We can work on that.
Yeah.
It's right. 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. So.
All right, other business.
Right. Why not? Yeah. Okay, ready to move on?
Yep.
So then we have one other discussion item today, which is the rules that we use to govern a public hearing. After some discussion last week, I think there was a consensus to go slow, not create a whole bunch of rules right out of the gate. Let's predominantly use the timer and time limitations on speakers and a few other rules that are noted here on page 43. And give it a try. Mr. Hickey?
So I really like this a lot. I think this is awesome. I think I'm confident this is going to fix all our problems. We'll see.
Where's our running list?
So I do have a question about the first bullet under public hearings. So I'm okay with the fact that we have to require all these materials are going to be projected up on the screen there to be presented in advance. But unless we have the staff do all the projection, I don't know how you enforce it. Someone doesn't change a number, add a line, add a page to their PowerPoint. Yeah. So even though it may be inconvenient, I think if we're really going to have this bullet and enforce it, I think it has to be projected by the staff and they have to control the presentation.
Go ahead. For discussion. This is the hardest bullet in this piece for me because I actually think it demands of us a look at the process of how the packet comes out. I mean, one challenge is that this would really put people in the position of having to submit their presentations without knowing what is in the packet. Because this would be, it has to be there on Wednesday prior to a Thursday packet release. The only, the way that I initially read it, which I'm not sure if it was the intent or not, was that the applicant cannot make changes. I actually think we should be a bit stronger than that. That the applicant really, I think, is there anyone from planning here?
Oh, right, if I remember, it's 28 days. Or 28 days that staff review.
The staff.
How many? 4 weeks.
4 weeks. 28 days. That's how long the staff review process takes. I actually think, if we walk this back a little bit, what I was going to propose is 2 weeks from the meeting, the agenda is set and published. 1 week from the meeting, the packet comes out. And then that meeting, you know, that night we have the packet. We can set these other dates around that timeline. I know, hey, just throwing it out for discussion. But I think a longer window to have the staff review comments and to have people consuming those and chewing on them might make for better discussion at the council meetings versus...
And I think I'm the one that helped craft that particular bullet. And I think what I... And you're making some good point. The thing I was reacting to is... receiving materials on Monday afternoon for a Monday evening hearing, and I haven't even seen it.
Yeah.
So what's the probably the crux of this bullet is really that, you know, folks, if you don't get materials to us in a timely manner, your item might not receive, we might not take a look at it that night.
I would even use stronger language. If you don't get it to us, it does not get heard.
But that does leave it, give them the option of, you know, if you want to try to rush it in on a Monday afternoon, I mean, yeah. you take your chances.
Yeah. So one thing that I kind of threw in my document, which is buried way down there, so I would understand if no one saw it, but it was this idea that you, once that you've submitted, we're talking about the submission. So the entire process should be less about the presentation of the developer. It should be about the submission that's before us for review. And so what I was kind of trying to see what people thought was, if the only way you can amend your submission is by submitting a continuation request. So we make it clear to that developer, to the neighborhood, or whoever's putting this in, that you cannot modify that until you ask for a continuation. That's the idea of how this thing will move forward. Then we stop getting so much churn. Hopefully we encourage people to be complete toward the front when they submit it versus trying to get it in and get in the line and then push things into the submission as it goes along. I actually think being more resistant to change might actually reduce the number of churn that we see, but...
I think it somewhat depends. It might be a slight editorial change, you know, just a clerical error that, oh, it's not supposed to be three, it's supposed to be two. You know, I'm not going to push them off just because of that.
I would agree with not pushing them off for those minor things, but I like to have us be that decision-making authority, or at least have staff, because at least if they're going to put new information out there, or, you know, in some cases we've had these dramatic changes at the last minute, that idea of requiring... The idea of requiring them to also request a continuation, even if we don't force them to take it up, we've covered ourselves, I think, in that circumstance. And this has already gone to planning. There shouldn't be big changes coming forward to us. And yet we have completely redesigned projects the day of.
I also want to take planning out of the position of having to make the call about what gets adopted as a minor change and what does not. For the sole reason being that the process looks very opaque to external parties. The process to people who don't want to see a development happen now is, look at staff is working with them to get this approved. When in reality, maybe these are all minor edits, but that's the perception externally versus the applicant made a mistake, the applicant realizes they made the mistake, the applicant fixes the mistake and resubmits. That is, you know, at least then it's that idea of, at least transparently, you know, there wasn't a back and forth between staff a whole bunch of times to try and get I's dotted and T's crossed. Really, I want our staff's time spent on a number of other things that aren't just ferrying these projects through the review process. I'm much more, I think setting the expectations higher, raising that bar just a little bit on what gets submitted, will have people just jump over a higher bar. I don't think we're going to see people not be able to clear it. It's more... make your expectations clear. When you submit, this is what we will review. If you have changes, you will start over. It's just a simple system. Maybe that's too simple.
So it sounds like of those bullets, the first one is the one that there's most discussion about. I told you my rationale for why I created it, but I'm open to whatever you want
to... I would like to see it pulled until we can come up with... I would like to talk at length about it, and I realize that maybe now is not the time to talk at length. The entire submission process, I think, for that one needs to be talked about.
So you would advocate just striking that bullet for now?
For now.
Mr. Belovac?
I'll say it again. I've said it before. I'll go along with whatever the consensus of the council is, and I'll support it. But I don't like the whole idea of time limits at all. we're here to hear the public. I think we, as the council and our administrative and our staff, we've known every time that we've gone long that we were going to go long. We've all known, we watched as they proceed through the system, and we kind of know when we're going to hit a stumbling block. So I really think it really comes back on us, but I'm willing to go along with it. I do agree with Nick, though, on a part of it. I agree with both of you on this. Some of these projects that show up at the last minute that are locked down, not necessarily the big construction project, because they're going to have changes, I understand that. And what major versus minor is, I don't know, and I think that's an interesting conversation that we should have. But I've been one who said that we should not be getting new pieces of paper at the desk when we walk in that night. If it's that late, it should be pushed off to the next council meeting. It should be addressed at all. There's too many times we're getting changes at the desk. You're trying to review what we're going to be reviewing that evening. Now you're getting new changes, and you're trying to figure out where they fit in. Again, where do they come from? Are they major, minor? I don't know. But I think if it's that late, and I just got an email just a few minutes ago from one of my constituents talking about a project we're going to be reviewing tonight. It's too late to be getting us information now. These projects have been known for a long time. They're coming a month, 2 months, 3 months ago. These projects start down the pipeline. That information needs to be gotten to us before Monday afternoon. And I think there needs to be just a cutoff point where we say, if it's not here to be in the packet on Thursday, it doesn't come to the council.
I agree with you. I think I really want to work on the cutoff. But I think we have to be very thoughtful about how we do it. I would put out some suggestions to council, and they got out to a bunch of people, and I received a lot of feedback that was along the lines of, we don't make sure you're not limiting the public's input, and in no way is that the goal. But the goal is to make the council higher functioning in my mind, like, to raise the quality of information that's coming in through the packet and the time we have to absorb that information is, you know, the shorter that gets, I think the harder it is to make the solid decision.
And I think, too, if the information we're getting is on a public hearing, the public hasn't had a chance to read it, see what's going on, and that puts them at a disadvantage. If they're going to support the project or not support the project, and all of a sudden we're getting information that they don't have. That makes that more difficult, too. So I agree with Mr. Campion that maybe we should just scratch that one for now and take the time to have a conversation on what the right time is.
Yeah, I'm fine with that, because the main thrust of this was to manage the time.
Yeah.
Mr. Wojcik.
So, I'll defer my comments on this other one when we take up Nick's, when we take up mine at the same time. But my issue is just that when we have a specialized topic that we know is going to attract a lot of attention, it's not just us sitting there through these longer hearings. It's also the fact that we've got a ton of highly paid staff who's sitting there probably enjoying their next day quite a bit less because of this. And if we have a topic like Uber, which, you know, is potentially not a hearing that most of the staff needs to be there for, by moving it to another night, we do everybody in the city a great service by doing that, including the people who come to talk about it. So I do want to keep moving these some of these higher profile hearings aside. Particularly, I think the time limits even help with that, because people know if they want to talk, they're going to show up between 7 and 8 on Wednesday. And I think the key thing is, other cities do this, but and I don't know if there's any requirements that are changed, but these public hearings, particularly the non-required ones, a lot of times they're just recorded and documented, and the city council can they can view it, they can read the minutes of it, so that we do get the public input, but it doesn't necessitate that we all sit there at that particular instant either. So, but we'll save that one for another day. It's something I do care about. I, like Mr. Bilderbach, I'm not thrilled about the time limits, but after when and where we heard about Rogers Tree Service, I'm a little bit more open to hearing time limits. And the one thing that'll get me to support it that's in here is the fact that if I have questions and I want to pull information out of the person that was talking there, it appears that this preserves my right to continue to ask questions to a person even if their time
is
expired.
It says council members may ask questions of a person who's already spoken.
Yeah, and that's why I'm willing to go along with it.
Mr. Campbell?
The only other change is the word rebut. I would maybe instead just, it's a language thing, but maybe say close or, I actually, it's okay, I think, that the standing of the meeting is at the request of whoever the applicant is. So I think it's okay to close or to have something to close. I am concerned about the rebut kind of automatically assuming that this is kind of like a cross-examination or something that has to happen, but I think giving 15 minutes to an applicant for the full range of their entire discussion should be sufficient, hopefully.
So how about provided 5 minutes for concluding comments?
Perfect. That's fine with me. No new information, I think, is the key that we...
And that's why the word rebuttal is in there, because rebuttal means no new information.
Okay.
It responds to that which has been presented since you initially...
You know what? You just convinced me. I like that. I don't want new information
because
in the applicant's clothes.
If you use the word rebuttal and they start bringing out new information, somebody can allege, wait a minute, you're violating our rule of proceeding. You can only respond to that which has been brought up since you last spoke.
Okay. Perfect.
I kind of like that, because then there's no, I also need to rebut, because then it's just we've gotten both sides of the argument. There's no opportunity for new arguments.
Right. So, Mr. Wojcik, okay. And Mr. Mayor.
My expectation, I guess, city clerk or designee will provide like a one-page overview on how these rules are going to work. And some of this stuff, like the rebuttal and the new information, is the kind of stuff that would be very helpful to have in the in a little one-page summary.
Mr. Mayor, then Mr. Hickey.
I happen to be one that I think that earlier said something about 10 minutes for the initial presentation, but I like what Mr. Bilderbeck said too, to a degree that we are going to have some, and already have had some major, major projects coming forward, and I'm not sure 10 minutes is giving them the time to really present something. You know, multi-million dollars. Think about Mayo's 5-year plan. Are we going to say 10 minutes, that's it? Or another $110 million project or something? I think we should be able to do something more than 10 minutes.
Mr. Ed.
And you can, because under Robert's 2/3 vote, you can suspend the rules. And these will be reduced to a resolution so that you can actually suspend the rules on a case-by-case basis.
Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Wojcik.
Seem like this is moving along, so I just want to say, it seemed like we were going to do January to implement these. Is that what we talked about?
Yeah, although I was going to offer, and you can consider this, I wasn't sure when the timer would be installed. If we wanted to give it a dry run at the next council meeting, we
tonight?
Could, but that's your call, the 19th.
The next one's tonight.
No,
I'm not. I was, you had me. Just a procedural, you mentioned 2/3 to suspend the rules. When we do a second reading, it's a unanimous to suspend the rules. Is that a different kind of suspension, or
that is? That's under the Home Rule Charter. Robert's
requires
2/3.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. I'm sorry. Who was up next? Mr. Mayor, you have another comment?
No.
Or Ms. Mays?
I have a very small comment on this summary that you're putting together for the council. So
you heard.
Who's putting it together? Whomever. Is there a way to notify the public? Can that be streaming on our station, or so that
we can figure out a way to try to notify the summary of what we're proposing? Yeah.
And if you come across any difficulty, and I haven't seen it in the minutes, no one's pulled a name lately, but would it be helpful at all to have people sign in or write their names at the podium, or if there hasn't been
it's
a
helpful
problem,
from a spelling point of view if we can read them. So we've kind of gone back and forth on that. We did have the requirement for a while. Half the people didn't sign in, or when they did, we couldn't read their name anyways. So
yeah.
It wasn't super helpful.
Okay.
Since we're getting into the limiting the, I think at this point it's just the time per speaker, right? Not the total time.
Correct.
Should we also limit the time of hearings, which a lot of cities do, later stuff, I get it. Then we want to have sign up and available in advance so people can get on there. And in fact, I think we should do that anyway right now, just have the sign up in advance.
I guess I was of the mindset of go slow, try this, and then
I can live with that.
Add more if need be.
I can live with that.
That's what you were going to say, right? Mr. Bilderbeck.
The only problem with that is how many times have we had people get up and say, I wasn't going to speak at this hearing, but I feel compelled to get up now. Or how many times were I sitting at home watching it on TV and then felt I needed to run down and speak? So the only thing is that might, if you're saying they have to sign up, that would be good, exclude people from speaking.
Would limit those. Yeah.
So were you, you were saying total time for a hearing, that limit, or total time for the night, that limit? Councilmember Wojcik.
I'm content with moving slow. I do think if we have a couple public hearings, if people, if there was a sign up and they got to go first,
yeah, it makes it easier. I guess my point is that this rule set does not absolve the need for staff to continue to be vigilant about what is coming forward. And I think if there's a issue where an agenda looks like it's getting filled and you can't make a decision, bring it back to us at a cow, and we can make a decision at least at 3:30 instead of at 9:10:30 at night to call certain ones not going to be heard then. Yeah. So I think it's good.
I was going to respond to the mayor's comment a little bit in terms of the limitation on the applicant. One thing that I think the public often forgets is we've got the materials. We've studied the materials. We see the notes and the comments from the Planning and Zoning Commission. We have staff comments. If we've done our homework, really all I need is give me the executive summary or hit the highlights or the points of contention, but I really don't need to go into the detail of a shadow study, for example.
I think you're absolutely right. The reason it's a public hearing is because, you know, to some degree, the developer's done a whole bunch of work already, had the review. Now we're looking for information that we had not collected otherwise, the public's input to right. the process.
So I think the time limit focuses, helps them focus on the salient points.
Yep.
Should be presented for us.
We'll see, right?
Well, yeah, just a little food for thought and maybe a little humor. We'll try and see what happens. What about us? I mean, the fact is we're putting time limits on everybody else, but we don't. We don't put one on ourselves.
Robert's Rules does. I'm pretty sure.
You can get a second mover of the question, right?
You can put a limit on it.
You can limit debate under Robert's.
We haven't. I mean,
no.
Everything we're doing here.
You don't need an ordinance to do that.
Just
saying, and you can call the question too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the second person calls the question, the chair has to call it, right?
No.
And no, there's an actual vote.
Two-thirds vote.
And then there's a vote on
two-thirds.
Right. But you can also limit debate. So you have a couple of tools available under Roberts.
The limiting debate also requires a supermajority, correct?
I believe it does.
I just think
I don't have my cheat sheet.
Yeah. Isn't there a standard in Roberts that any discussion on an item is limited to 10 minutes?
That's news to me.
Okay, then I guess not then.
No, you can make a motion to limit debate to another 5 minutes or another 10, whatever. That's where a convert comes in. So on these bullets, what I'm hearing is we're going to strike the first bullet for now.
Under public hearings?
Yes. And leave the other one stand?
I agree.
And then are we willing to maybe give it a dry run on the council meeting on the 19th?
We need to.
So what I will do is I've taken the liberty of actually producing the resolution adopting all of these requests or suggestions. I'll strike the first bullet. You can adopt it under other business tonight. It'll be effective December 19th.
And then what I would plan to do, by the way, is at the beginning of the public hearings for probably the first couple of meetings, is I'll read through these so that everyone is aware. I mean, it'll be resident in every packet, just like the rules for the open comment period are, but we'll try to highlight it.
So the easy part is having the rules. I think the harder part is enforcing them to some degree.
That's why I wanted to do a dry run. This time I won't release the trapdoor.
Okay. So I guess that my question was, as the chair, would you prefer that it remains your responsibility to call people on the question or to introduce like a parliamentarian role? Because the other thing would be to introduce a staff person as they will call out when time has expired. Maybe I just want to address it now.
I mean, I'm just fine with doing it. I mean, when the light goes off, everyone in the room is going to know. And it's up to me as chair to say,
maybe that
sorry, time's not.
We can revisit it if it becomes a problem. I think that's the... the most, and I think you do a good job of remaining impartial. It's the one thing about giving it to staff is that no one looks like the bad guy. Someone looks like the bad guy. Maybe the city attorney,
but they get paid.
Analogizing to the court system, it's the presiding judge
who
calls us and tells us when the light goes red. So I would think the presiding officer would do that.
See what
there is an option where we'll start incessantly beeping once the button goes off.
And then a big book comes out.
If you want to use it, you can.
Is there a gong?
I don't think there's snow removal going on.
Got it. Throw it out there in case you want it.
Yep. Can you remotely enable that? Or?
Yes, we can.
Starts.
All right. So we'll see this evening.
All right.
To bring this to other business. Mr. OJ.
Okay. Regarding PASC, well, the President Staver and I are probably going to disagree on some of this quite a bit, but I'm in the process of working with staff to come up with a list of questions to be answered that I think will pull out a lot of information. It's come to my attention that I know a lot of what's going on with the planning department that maybe the rest of the council doesn't, and I'm going to do my best to try and pull that information out and make it public. I believe the most recent response I had from the city administrator is that my list of questions, none of them were out of bounds, but some of them might not be appreciated, which is probably where I was going for. And but I look forward to getting those questions out there and getting some answers, and it'll take a little bit of time for that. The one thing I do want to hit on, and this is what really bothered me about the last meeting, is that we're going into budget talks on Wednesday. We have no direction, no understanding if the county is committed to properly funding the staff that we need for our planning department in 2017. This is a huge issue, and how do we handle this? Do we keep extra contingency, or that's the one thing that I think is really timely that we have to address.
Mr. Bildebeck.
I think that's a fair question, Michael. I think for one thing, that there was a request made by Mitzi back a few months ago, and she put in what her request was.
Mm-hmm.
But you're correct as far as we have not received any response on that. But I know there was a request made a couple meetings back.
And she reiterated the number of positions requested at this last meeting. The response, and we did ask the county administrator, you know, what were the budgeting or funding, and I think the basic response was, well, they haven't gone through and set their budget yet, so they hadn't established whether those positions would be funded or not.
Here's the biggest issue for me is that what the county administrator implied a number of times was that there was that if these positions were truly needed, that the city would be on the hook for funding them, and which concerns me because we already fund 76% of the planning department through our tax base. And but in particular, the meeting itself, there were actually no actions that were formally taken. So we're hoping that they get back to us. We're hoping that they address these, but we don't have anything formal that's going on right now.
Mr. Quinville.
I think it's a subject that you may want to have some discussion between the council and the commissioners. I would be strongly recommend that you not fund those positions independently without some basic understanding of how that consolidated planning department is to function. If you start funding it separately, then why don't you fund them all?
And that's additionally of a concern because we were supposed to have this joint meeting until it was pulled out from underneath us and then never rescheduled. And I don't know where that thing sits, but this should be at the top of our list with working with the county.
Something you need to discuss with the commissioners, I believe.
Yeah. Moving on, you know my stance on that. Moving on, the second one. Every year at the beginning of the year, we set this. This is our how we handle our meetings. We actually had a couple things switched in here this year. But
actually, it's a typo from the year past as well.
So here's I didn't really have time to. I was going to do like a demonstration one. This week, but I didn't have time, so I just wanted to kind of get a rough template of what I'm thinking. There's, as I can see, since council members can introduce motions anyways with a second, there's no reason if you have two council members that want to do something, why don't we just print it ahead of time and have it in the council packet? So this is the kind of information that I was looking to put in a template. Basically, it's for the council action. Who makes the motion? Who seconds it? What date is it submitted? What's the intended council meeting date? Who's the responsible staff member? What's the target completion date? And then either content or motion. And the idea being, two members can pull this up anytime they want at a council meeting. Out of courtesy, what we can do is publish it in the agenda ahead of time, as long as it's in by whatever date we set for our time. And what that'll do is ensure that actions that a couple council members want to see at least come up for a vote or take some action taken, they will appear. Everyone has time to come prepared to discuss it. There's no springing on you at the last second kind of thing. And additionally, as Mr. Bilderbach and I both passionately believe, there's a completion date on here, which doesn't mean that everything's necessarily going to be done by that completion date, but at least it's out there, and we can start wondering. And I think the last thing is, by putting this in ahead of time, too, if staff wants to weigh in and work with the council members who are submitting this, they have the opportunity to do that as well. But the bottom line is, this is a way of council members putting something directly on the agenda so that the public and the rest of the council has the ability to see it ahead of the meeting. Thoughts, comments?
Mr. Hickey.
So just because, I mean, this definitely has merit. I will just say that we've done something similar in the past, that just by consensus. So if we discuss something around, typically at a COW, and there's consensus to put it on the agenda, then we've done it that way. Yep. So it's similar, yep. Instead of just two members.
And that could still be done. They're not mutually exclusive. I've personally had a lot of frustrations with things that I thought were coming forward, not coming forward, and this at least formalizes it.
And I think the part that I like best is the content and the motion itself. I think the reason there's been maybe negative reaction is if it gets brought up in other business and others have not had a chance to be aware of it or read it. If you want to have a format for formally putting something in other business, the content of the request item and the intended motion, that gives us the pre-warning or information that we need to look at it. Some of the other things I'm not so sure of, but the content and the motion for sure.
I have no problem with it. I mean, it formalizes the process, as Mr. Hickey said, that we already use. But the part that I like is it gives a target completion date, and it does say target. It doesn't say it has to be absolute. At least that way we keep things moving, and I think that's important that we do that. And then again, there is no surprise, because people see this beforehand. It's not going to be dropped on as another business where no one might have an idea.
So. Mr. Hickey.
I do think there's a distinction. I mean, the process now is to move it on to the agenda by the consensus of the council. It should be two members, so that's a distinct difference. And I think, personally, I think moving something on the agenda by consensus has been effective in the past.
So, and that's where I got confused. So the motion and second, I don't really see the need for that. In other words, Mr. Woodruff wants to bring up a topic. It's in some format that says, here's the content of the topic I want to bring up, and here's the motion I intend to make. And then it comes up under the business, and see if you get a second and go from there.
And this is a conflict between the way that city councils can operate, what we're allowed to operate, and the way that the city council in Rochester currently operates. I don't like this gatekeeper, get it to the committee of the whole, the consensus, which is informal because we don't have formal votes at these things, to get it on the council agenda. Under Robert's rules, again, any two council members can bring up a topic for voting. That's what this reflects, it doesn't allow you to, you know, again, not everyone has to support it, but under Robert's rules, it only takes two people to bring something up for a vote. So that's it's a way of expediting it. And, you know, but I would suspect that most of the bigger topics are end up getting referred here anyway.
Mr. Camp and then Mr. Newman.
I think that it does a few other things I think would be important. One that you mentioned that I just think is worth deserves repeating is prepares staff to comment on ideas that are coming forward. So if Councilmember Wojcik says redo the zoning ordinances by February 1st of 2017, then staff can come back and say it's unlikely that we can accomplish that in that time frame, regardless of the desire of the council. But I actually like this idea significantly for structuring other business, because I think there's a visceral reaction when something's going poorly to immediately introduce something. Given this, I think, and the ability for people to kind of put this in, gives people an opportunity to at least see that that's going to be discussed, build a little bit of maybe a minor amount of expertise, and frankly then maybe to ask that council member, you know, I see you want to talk about another change to the Uber ordinance under other business. I would prefer we handle that under the COW. Will you be willing to make a motion to schedule this for the next COW meeting versus discussing it under other business? I think there's plenty of stuff that sets up a lot better than the current scheme, which is probably a little bit too loosey-goosey.
Official. Mr. Newman.
Yeah, I'm neither for nor against this. It's the council's business. I would have one caveat, though, and that is that on the staff level, it's my belief that the staff already, generally speaking, has more to do than we can get done. So I hope this doesn't lead to, well, we ask for this to come up at a meeting and you don't have enough information, and then become a cause for saying, staff, why aren't you getting this done? I mean, frankly, I think our staff has been doing a tremendous amount of work for the last 10 or more years, of more things that we can really easily accomplish. So I would hope there'll be some forbearance, let's say, or relaxation if for some reason you don't have enough information. We have people who say generally we can't get it done for some reason. So,
is your concern that just the introduction of this, what the expectation by council will then be, why wasn't staff ready to talk about this thing we put in other business?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or whatever the target completion date is. I'm just saying, and this is your business. This is not my business. I'm just saying, I want to make sure we also take into account that we have a finite group of staff members generally in the city, and we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
Okay?
My expectation, too, would be that frequently we put in something like this, and staff might throw in a few quick comments. You know, we're planning on dealing with this second quarter of next year. You know, is that the appropriate time to do it?
I do see some advantages in that, at least from the staff member, we know that more than just one of you wants something. I know Michael has had a lot of frustration with me over time because he wants something. You sit there and you don't say anything. I may not do it. So at least if a council member wants something, then I'd like to know the rest of, at least the consensus of the council wants something done. So this would at least accomplish to get all the council members on record if they wanted this item to proceed or not.
Okay.
If you're going to adopt this form, I would suggest that you take out motion and second, because that implies a meeting.
Okay.
And instead put in requested by council member blank and requested by council member blank, so they can just fill in the last names. And then under motion, very last one, insert proposed before the word motion.
I like that.
And what section of the agenda should it come under?
It could either go on
other business.
So here's the thing. What I would suggest is it could be other business. But we do this resolution every year. We can just add a letter.
Yeah, you could
make this
a
separate. Council-initiated actions.
You could add a new section to the agenda called council-initiated actions, or you could bring it under other business. The resolution Michael is referring to is the order of business, which is one of the items you take care of at your annual meeting. That'll be January the 4th. And so it will come up at that time, and that would be the time if you want to insert this process and a new agenda item.
So in terms of edits, I went one step further than the city attorney. I struck the first one that said council action, and then the last line I would say proposed motion or council action requested.
Okay. I can live with all this.
Okay. And I think maybe to Mr. Newman's comments, you know, when you put down a target completion date, you know, that one I'm not quite sure about, because you might not preemptively know what that is until you have the discussion.
Yep.
Or at the very minimum, it should be a reasonable. I almost need to talk to Richard or Randy or someone to get an idea. I don't know what the date is. They might alert me to something that says, no, we're not going to get to it.
Yeah.
So I don't know about the target completion. I understand why we want to do it, so that we make sure that things are moving along. I just don't know how you set that date exactly, Mr. Campion.
Not only that, I'd say like one of the most challenging things once your organization reaches full capacity is that everything then becomes a question of priority. Like everything we're dealing with now is about priority relative to other items that staff are working diligently to complete, and I trust that that is happening. But I do think that when certain things come up, having the ability to understand what a reasonable timeline is actually a really valuable thing they can give us back. Is to say, if I come in and say all ordinances should be on pink paper, and the city attorney tells me that it would take me 14 and a half weeks to order enough pink paper to reprint everything. But I think we can have that conversation, and having the date will at least start it, even if you leave a question mark in there. I think that
And I specifically didn't put that as part of the council action.
Right.
because we're not directing staff at that date. It's a courtesy to us, and with something that we can update to that it just gives us a feel for when we can expect to be done. And if somebody says January, and as they say we already did it, I guess we don't have to worry about it. That's okay. I got your comments on that.
So, Mr. Atkins, what's the next step? I made a few edits.
Right. I assume you're going to wait till January the 4th because this will be coming up as part of the organizational business at your annual meeting. Is there a consensus to go ahead and adopt this process? That would help the city clerk and I in terms of preparation.
I'm not opposed.
I'm in favor.
All right. And do you want to create a separate item on the agenda or keep it under other business?
What was the suggested wording you would say for that?
Council, actually it was Michael's, council initiated actions.
And I was gonna suggest then we'd stick it between letters and petitions and then right after letters and petitions.
Reports and recommendations that you're suggesting then? Letters and petitions, that's generally the public bringing something.
I mean, after after the consent agenda.
Right, so the new E would become council-initiated actions.
Okay.
Fine.
Let me move on.
Give it a shot.
All right.
You can always change it at any time with rules and proceedings.
Yes.
Do you have other business? Okay, I have other business, and I'm going to preempt his discussion of that.
Sure.
I just wanted to ask the city attorney, do we make Word document copies of our ordinances available on the website?
Yes.
Okay.
Word
format?
I don't know about...
No, I think they're all PDF.
Okay. I think they're all PDF.
This is incredibly important to me, and I'd like to just talk about, quickly, if the council may. I'm getting, or I received a modified ordinance that an applicant had what looked like cut and paste out of a PDF into a Word document and then made some changes. And the hard part was they only cut out the portions that they wanted to take and left some in the PDF. So we don't get a red line version. It's kind of just blue changes, not red changes, if that makes sense.
Just to clear, so they pasted it as an image instead of a text?
They somehow cut the text out of something. They cut the text out of something, put the text into a Word doc, but it's not keeping track of things they've subtracted out of the ordinance. It's only keeping track of new things they've added. So what I was going to kind of suggest was maybe as a service to the development community and frankly as a service to our staff, if we could make the Word version available, when they download it, we could force them to turn on the tracking so when they submit, they're obligated to submit a version to staff that show the changes that they've made. Because one of the things that I think is going to take a number of times is when they submit 38 pages of Word document and we have to go comb through the entire thing to find every single change, it feels like that actually is a process that's likely to miss changes, and maybe I should defer to your expertise in this matter.
Well, all I know is that there's a thick book of ordinances we have, and you're asking that they all be made available on Word online?
Well, I assume they're available somehow online. Is that
they're available online, but as a PDF, I think.
Yeah. Oh, my lordy.
Something maybe created those PDFs.
Well, I'm just worried that going forward, for instance...
I apologize. The biggest concern I would have, Nick, is I guess I'm not familiar enough with Word. I mean, it probably wouldn't be. Jody probably has them out there. But the thing would be, I would be very concerned about putting Word documents out there that everybody and their brother can go ahead and just start, sending in these modifications to without having some sort of, as long as Terry or whomever has some sort of control to make sure nothing that is out on the public site,
Mr. Reeves,
reflects changes that haven't been approved by the council.
Yeah, Mr. Reeves.
The other thing I would say too is that as we kind of learned when I sent a Word version, I think of the taxicab changes, if you don't have either the same version of Word or tracking on your Word, you're not going to see their changes either. So there's no guarantee just because they're available in Word that you get it. It'll have been done right, and you're going to be able to see it that way.
Gosh.
So, I mean, but I think the Word versions are definitely all, we have them all.
Yeah, there needs to be a way to do this.
If you want us to put them on, then we could easily put them on LaserFish and make them available.
Yeah, I guess my net is a little bit different. Like, the goal for me is not to have the Word document available because I honestly don't care. What I care about is being able to quickly determine what changes have been made to an ordinance that we're about to adopt as
the
law.
You're relying on a third party to be able to use Word correctly to provide that to you in the right format. So there's no guarantee, no matter how we provide it to them, that that person doing it is going to do it right.
I like paper copies.
Yeah, well, this seems like a,
oh, come on.
This seems like a huge. I mean, it's not. It's funny if it wasn't so critical that like a neighborhood group or someone is going to get this. They can't without going through and doing their own line by line evaluation of everything that's changed. They have, how about a council member who gets it? I get it in a packet in a paper copy. How am I supposed to know that? How am I supposed to be able to enumerate all the changes that have been made to 30 pages of ordinance? I mean, we should all be quite concerned about this. Like, that's a big liability for the city in terms of enacting new ordinances, being able to not be able to tell. I guess maybe my expectation should simply be to staff that when we get it, it needs to be exacting. It needs to be redlined exactly the same way we got the Uber ordinance tonight. I thought that was fantastic. I want, and I think our expectation should be, every ordinance that comes before us that's an amendment has that sort of work done to it, because alternate is to be left with it guessing, did they intend to drop this paragraph that isn't here anymore? Was that an accident? Now do I have to go back later and amend it again to add it back? I think that the expectations need to be in line with what, I guess I would expect to see that from going forward. But
Mr. Hickey?
Maybe I'll defer.
Maybe I'm just not understanding what the context is. Because, for example, when we did the HPC ordinance, that's exactly, we had red line copy, went through it line by line. I'm trying to think of the circumstances where we get something that hasn't had a change.
The developer in this particular case submitted a version that did not have the removals indicated. Usually those are stricken, and they will be left in the document. Instead, what happened was they just weren't there.
And I'm not sure how to prevent that. And if I hear Aaron correctly, nothing we can do will prevent that from happening.
We can give it to them the word they want.
Can we make them sign a legally binding?
Mr. Spade?
Well, one way to deal with it, I mean, instead of putting that whole ordinance out there as a Word document, if someone has a particular interest in a chapter, you know, chapter 85 or whatever, ask, you know, Terry could possibly ask Jody or whomever from his staff to send that out, that particular chapter, as, you know, create a separate document as whatever it is, 850, you know, version 2 or whatever. Let this other party take their crack at whatever those changes are, submit them back to Terry, you know, for
well, that's
and then he can push it out to
that's
all
what a document management system would do, but that would require everyone using the same repository. I check out the document, make my changes, put it back, so then Nick sees everything I've done and makes his edits. But if you start piecemealing out the document, then you're going to get what we have now.
I mean, it's nauseating. I'll tell you guys, this is all coming from the last time we did the Chateau Circle thing, and they yep. showed up at the last
blue
minute.
Blue font.
With right, with blue a blue font copy. And the net, we repeatedly, I know it's not intentional, but we're not addressing this issue, which is that when the ordinance, like a special district, we adopt that, it's not just a document that goes in plan. Like, that's an ordinance of the city of Rochester with legal meaning. So
and,
I think we...
And if you put in that bullet point that you took out about submission of materials, that would give staff the ability to check to make sure that blue font version is an accurate version.
I took it out because I want it to
I know,
be,
you
I
did.
The but standard
what I'm
to be
saying,
higher.
If it's in there, because that came up at the public hearing. That
yeah.
blue font version was distributed at the public
hearing. We don't need to be doing... I don't want to be fixing these problems at the public hearing.
Right.
I want them to be fixed at submission time.
And at least at submission time, that gives staff a chance to look it over and compare with the original or another version to make sure it's accurate.
What you described is what I want. That the applicant comes to our city attorney and says, I would like Ordinance 95. You give them Ordinance 95. They make their edits. We have some way when we take it back to say, this matches what we gave them, and then these are the changes. Because that, to me, is a system that eliminates a whole class of issue that exists in the system, which is they don't know what they're doing, they accidentally did this, they are intentionally trying to hide something in the ordinance that we're not going to catch because it's a small decimal point somewhere. There is a whole slew of concerning things that can happen when we're having private developers write ordinances for the city of Rochester that I would prefer to catch as part of this this differentiation process.
And we need a deadline for the submission.
Okay.
Of materials.
Okay. Let me write
and
these
too
down.
Too late to add another attorney to my budget.
Deadline for submission.
Because somebody is going to have to do that comparison.
I just don't want. I think that this can be electronic.
Right. I mean, like for Word.
There's certain many firms
they've got
who
a
do
program.
Those. I think we need to talk to the firms and make sure.
Well, you're going to need a motion for that, right?
I've seen,
I mean,
I've seen
many.
Program that'll do a diff on Word documents.
Well, so. Again, you really everyone needs to work with the same repository
and
check in, check out documents.
An additional safeguard that we can do is have a signed document from the applicant or whoever suggesting the changes, listing what they've changed, and anything that they do not explicitly list is not recognized.
Is that possible?
Yes.
Seems like
absolutely.
A lot of overhead.
I mean, you're right. A document management system fixes this. I'm going to be expecting that this gets done to some degree. Like when an ordinance shows up, I'm going to say, what else is there anything else in here that hasn't changed the staff? If it's just this, then I think we all should be very, very concerned about that. If this is the best we can get out of, has anything else changed?
Mr. Hickey?
So I agree in this particular instance it's a problem. I'm just trying to think of another similar situation. I mean, this is that one time that was this massive change to this ordinance. But typically, I don't think it's much of an issue.
I hope that is not an issue again. I bring it up because I fear that it will have some contextual relevance again. So that's the reason I'm bringing it forward for your consideration today. Maybe to lay a little bit of groundwork for a discussion we have later on. But that's all I intended to do today.
Also
I have what I need.
Instruction we should provide to the planning department to provide to people who are preparing these.
Yeah.
That you know the council will be expecting a clear differentiation
right.
of.
Right.
Was in the
without an enumeration, you should expect more. Yeah, okay.
I can tell you that typically when I get the elaborate ordinance drafts from someone other than staff, they deal with special districts.
Mm-hmm.
They are very elaborate. And so that is the primary example of an ordinance that takes a lot of time to go through, and it would take a lot of time for me to try to go back and compare it with the version that's been enacted. But at least that narrows the scope.
Oh, you mean in terms of making a motion.
All right.
Got it.
Mr. Woodrick, another comment?
Got two more that should be relatively quick. BPAC, the ordinance has been available for some time. We've all seen it. I think it's a fantastic ordinance. The bike pedestrian community thinks it's a fantastic ordinance. Staff doesn't want to act on it until the new year. I've been pushing for it. But what Gary suggested, and I'll grudgingly... except is that we lay out who the members of this board would be, and that's one of the issues is I want to get this moving because it takes a while to get those members on there. And he suggested that we post for the membership of BPAC in anticipation of this. We're obviously not obligated to do anything with that, but at least post for those members and line them up so when we pass a BPAC ordinance where we have a BPAC group that's ready to go. And Richard, let's see.
Until you establish who should be on the committee,
yeah.
I think it's going to be hard to ask the public to apply.
And that's in the ordinance, though.
It's in
the draft
ordinance that you looked at. And,
yes.
But it's not in the ordinance the council has adopted.
Well, the council's looked at it, though, and had it for
right.
some time. And that was my whole thing. I'm willing to pass that ordinance tonight because it's awesome. But in lieu of doing that, I would at least like to post for those positions. If we change it, hey, we change it. Then somebody else maybe doesn't get on there. But I just want to get the process moving.
Other comments? I'm not quite ready to adopt it yet, and here's why. Because we talk at length about, and it's a philosophical point, we talk at length about a comprehensive plan, a true comprehensive plan, and companion zoning regulations that take into context a lot of things, including transportation and different modalities, whether it be bicycle and so forth. We've talked about incorporating aspects of complete streets and downtown master plan. So philosophically, I would pose if you do your comprehensive plan and those core documents, those core guiding documents correctly, would not those elements be inclusive that we would be talking about? Why would we set up a separate group or structure for pedestrian bicycles? We also have a separate group for transportation in general. And I wonder if we're going down the same path that we did before when we created complete streets and so forth, do we start to fragment things and then at some future date they run into conflict with one another? I'm just stating a philosophical point more than
anything.
I don't even really know how to respond to that other than say BPACs exist everywhere, and it's just part of being a modern city. But so my issue was getting, I've been under the assumption that we're going ahead with BPAC, but if there's more people that think that we might not go ahead with BPAC, then we need to get that on the table then as well, because that would undercut what I'm looking to do.
You're raising a question, that's all. Mr. Campion.
I have very little problem with establishing groups to help provide input into the legislation of the city, and it's probably something that I think produces better legislation often. So I actually agree with Michael. I think the ordinance looked ready to, for prime time. I don't know if staff has feedback other than that, but they probably haven't had a lot of time given all the stuff they're working on to take a tackle at it. But I think it looked like it was ready to go. If we want to post for the positions, I'd be fine with that. I do plan on making sure that BPAC is a part of the city, so maybe counter position there. But you know, I don't know that we need to rush it, but if it's something that people are passionate about, I'm willing to post tonight or tomorrow and get people in here to get heard.
Mr. Bilderback.
I have no problem with posting the people for the positions and start that process. I've always made my thoughts known that I'm concerned about biking, pedestrian travel throughout the city of Rochester through the heart of the city, and so I have no problem with this. We've already had a group, Richard and his group are willing to have it housed there. I think that's fine. I'm sure that Richard will make sure that they abide by the rules they're supposed to, right, Richard?
Right.
And so I have no issue there. I don't, BPAC, I think, in for the longest time was probably placed in the wrong spot, and I think this makes sense. So while he's not saying that we're passing the ordinance, he's just saying that we should be willing to start posting that position to start letting people apply, and I'm supportive of that.
Yeah, and let me be clear. I'm not falling on my sword on this thing. I was raising it explicitly as a philosophical point. I think anytime you carve out some element, this happened to be BPAC, anytime you carve something out, there's always the potential, sorry Terry, of unintended consequences. If you somehow give something some special attention. And that's my only point. I'm not falling on my sword on this one, Mr. Hickey.
Yeah, I think you know where I stand on BPAC, so I'm not interested in moving forward. Anything at this point?
Okay. Sandra, is it okay if we post for BPAC?
I think you should.
You have your direction.
Do you have one other thing?
I will just say it's not going to happen until the first of the year anyway.
Right.
We just finished 35 interviews.
Yep, that's fine. The process has begun. Last item on a public safety issue. Randy, some time ago, this popped into my head because there was just a fire in Oakland, California. And a bunch of people died in a converted warehouse. It brought me back to the discussions. I don't remember how they ended with the Stone Barn, the facility that Powers has now. I sent them a note asking if we had updated that to meet fire code in terms of exits and fire suppression right now. I know previously it didn't, and that was always a sticking point with the previous person there. Is that thing up to code, or would that be a question for the fire department, or are we?
If I understand, we issued a building permit for a seasonal use assembly hall.
Okay.
Basically, and it does. It is up to building
permit
for that use.
That's all I wanted to know. I feel better.
Mr. Newman?
Just one informational item. One of the other items you talked about with the bicycle groups was the zero deaths thing, and George actually had a date set up with MnDOT for that presentation. Unfortunately, they set it up on Martin Luther King Day, and so we were looking for a different date, so we will get that going.
Okay.
And George may have already gotten another date. I don't see George here, but I'll check back with him. But he had quickly got on that, got a date set, but then forgot about the Martin Luther King Day holiday when we won't be here.
Okay.
Okay.
Anything else?
Well, since we're going to, you just want to give this.
Is it good or bad?
I have my own copy.
I'll frame it.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So that was it. Yes, all right.